You all my people, welcome back to episode 5.
Yes.
The Jolamis the Mighty podcast.
Episode 5.
It's Chop Life Crew, Who They Breathe Boys.
And we have now the CEO of DSS.
The new CEO.
The new CEO.
Yeah.
He's always been the CEO, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know.
But that's the new CEO of DSS right there.
We had it confirmed with Damson.
Damson confirmed it?
He was acting on uncertified elections.
Come on. Yeah, no one. We always knew we had it. He was right here in Linwood.
What's good, people? Welcome back.
Yes, sir.
And it's been a couple of weeks since we recorded.
Yes, sir.
Boys have been occupied, but
of course,
back at it, trying to do what we have to do. And today we came with a special guest.
Come on,
you know what I'm saying? This is not anyone with small accolades, because the accolades that I collect for this man
is bigger.
It will finish this episode.
Come on, Ichok.
Nah, but Temi Tope, welcome, my brother.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate you coming out to the episode.
My people, thank you for having me, man. It's a pleasure. It's a privilege. Love being on here,
How you guys been?
Been good, man.
Well, Ramadan,
Yeah.
You know how it is.
Yeah. Sheesh. I like the shirt.
Not even water.
Yeah. Hey, bro, you strong, bro.
So, finishing off the month strong. So. Yeah.
How many more days?
Probably we're done. We're pretty much done.
It's like one more day.
It's always a huge debate on what day is Eid gonna be. It's based on moon sightings. So some people are like, we saw the moon, we're gonna release Eid. Others like, no, we didn't see it.
So it depends on the part of the world too.
Yeah, huh? If you don't see it in your part of the world, you just gotta keep going, man.
Yeah. So I thought it was gonna be tomorrow, but one more day.
One more day.
Be fast.
All right. Okay. Shout out to J. Cole too. He just signed with the hometown.
Rwanda? Team, yeah, J. Cole is playing Rwanda. He's playing for the Rwanda team.
He's playing in the league there.
He's actually really nice.
J. Cole can ball.
Which J. Cole?
J. Cole, Jermaine.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. He's playing on a pro basketball team in Rwanda?
Oh, damn, that's what's up.
So, shout out to J. Cole.
Shout out to my guy, man.
Yes, sir.
Big ups.
Come on.
But tell me, for those who don't know, if you don't know, you are lost. But for those who don't
chairman
know,
chairman over here, it's the chairman himself.
Yeah, gentle.
the introduction. Who are you? What's your heritage? What's your claim to fame? Whatever you need the people to know.
All right. I got you. So big shout out to my guys once again, Ivan and E, for having me on. So, like Ivan said, my name is Temi Tope Akinfolare, known in the Seattle area as Temi. I was born in Southwest Nigeria, so I was born in Akure, but I grew up in Ibadan. Ibadan is actually the second largest city in Africa by mass, next to Cairo. So shout out to my IB team, man. And then came out to the U.S. straight to Washington State, Tacoma, 253. In 2004, so I've kind of been in here a minute. It's been great to see the Seattle scene and kind of what it's grown from, from 2004 to what we have now, and where, we're starting to have acts. We're having different Afrobeat events everywhere, Shout out to the home team. Shout out to Afrophoria and my partner, Deola D, We can't wait to get it popping again. So,
no doubt,
man. Yeah, you guys have put on some great shows for us over the years. We can't wait to have you guys,
because we need to be outside, man.
Come on, boys are vaccinated, and that.
Yeah, but boys are sick of sitting home, man. And we hear you guys. We just gotta. It's all safety, so we gotta make sure it's safe to come out.
Yes, sir.
And, take all the precautions. We want everybody to have a good time and not go home and be like, oh man, 14 days, I gotta sit home or whatever.
Yeah.
So,
Jansley, stop playing.
Come on, Inslee.
We will move to Texas.
Release the thing.
Release the thing.
Come on.
Today we wanted to talk to you, Temi, about pressures that African men face while choosing a spouse, right? Because obviously we know you're married.
Okay.
And as a person who we kind of look up to, like, what kind of pressures do African men face while choosing a spouse, and do they face pressures at all?
Okay. So yeah, great point. Forgot to mention that in my intro. It was a quick intro. So I am married. I have a beautiful 2-year-old daughter, and she's always riding with me. You know, she actually rode with me here today.
Yes,
so
shout out Sade.
She our new crew member.
Yes,
shout out to Sade. Yeah. So I think African men do face some pressure when they select a spouse, especially when the spouse is not of the African heritage. Mm-hmm. But I think it varies by the family, right? So, and I think the sense is that there's a tendency to get pulled away from your heritage when you marry somebody outside of your culture. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny because even it's in some ethnic groups or in some areas where you have it, where they'll even tell you, like, I'll use Nigeria as an example, right? Where like a Yoruba person will tell you, oh, don't marry Igbo, or Igbo person, will be like, oh, don't marry Hausa, you know. And even within Igbos, you could be like, oh, don't marry from this other state. You know, you got to be from this village. You got to marry a girl from this village, you know. And I've had homies where, you know, they were dating people out here and everything seemed like it was cool from the spouse's or the partner's standpoint. But then, like, they just kind of break up cold turkey. And then, like, a year later, you know, the person's back with a wife.
Because of the pressure, or you feel like?
A wife from, you know, from back home. So, So stuff like that, it'll be the pressures. Because, I mean, like I said, it depends on the family. Some families will be like, you know what? I'm not having it. You know, if you go ahead and do this, then, you know, you're kind of going to strain that relationship with the family. And so you have some cases where people will have to, you know, choose up and, like, you know what? And there have been cases where people actually chose up and went with the spouse and became a strained relationship with the family, you know.
And I think to what you're saying is we have to ask too of, it is good, I feel like, to be considerate of how your family will react to, I guess, bringing either someone not from your ethnic group, not from your country, and then you take it to not from your, you know, your whole continent. You know, you have to consider that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I actually mentioned it varies because you'll see some families are more willing, more open, more accepting.
Mm-hmm.
And others, I don't know if you want to use the word conservative, that they do not tolerate, well, they will not tolerate it, or you will have a really tough time.
Yeah.
So do we, you know, like our millennial generation, do we feel like we can still find ourselves in situations where trying to bring certain individuals into our families, certain spouses will cause like turmoil or disarray, family drama that is unbearable?
I think that for sure happens. So you're saying as millennials, do you think it's more of like a commonality, or?
Yeah, does it still, how relevant is that still? And how important do we hold on to that?
Well, if we're the ones getting married, I think it's very relevant, right? Because.
Yeah, I think it's still very relevant. Yeah. Very applicable to us.
And Tammy, you'll have to speak on what you think about it, but our parents' generations are still like traditional in a sense, you know.
Yeah.
If there is a non-traditional generation, it would have to be the millennial generation, which is still traditional in itself.
I feel like largely are still,
but it's starting to break out more than our parents' generation and their parents' generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So starting to stray away from like certain norms that might not be all that beneficial, right?
For sure.
How would you see that, Timmy?
So I'll say with our generation, I think we've kind of come a long way where you've had a lot of African men that have married outside the African continent that it seems people are getting used to it. So I'll say the people that actually have it harder are the African women that try to marry
non-Africans.
That's a good point.
There's more pressure on the women than there is on the men. Because, and I think part of it is traditionally in Africa, as a woman, when you marry into a family, you inherit your husband's culture.
traditionally.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays it's really not the case. It's more of you still bring your own culture with you, but I think traditionally it was always the woman inherits their husband's culture. So, and I guess you haven't seen as much of that. I think just being that over the years, you've seen more like African men with non-Africans. The other side of the coin, which is the African women with non-Africans, is you just starting to see more of it now. Yeah. So I think our generation is really the one that's, you know, they're starting to be like, you know what? And hey, you know, as long as, you know, whoever you with makes you happy and treats you well, I think to each their own. So,
but in line with that, do you think that African men get too much hate for not marrying African women, or non-Africans?
Yeah.
You think it's too much hate?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's blown out of proportion. To for a lot of times, you know, and I'm just saying based on things I see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the criticism I see towards some, you know, especially when I see like an African man, for example, marries a white woman, mm-hmm. or so, I do tend to see a lot of shade and comments that are not so nice sent mm-hmm. their mm-hmm. way. And it's like, are you really happy for the guy? And I understand, like, of course, we want each other to, like, you know, as even just black people in general, to, you know, to do what Dr. Umar says. But, you know, if the man finds a good spouse, a good woman who is, you know, willing to also embrace some his culture as well, vice versa, what's the issue? I do know, though, the, you know, and I was speaking for personally, like, religion is sometimes a huge deal breaker
mm-hmm.
of it, yeah. You know, that's the only case where I was like, okay, that's a lot of pressure, right? So, you know, for me, for example, as a Muslim man, if I want to bring one, a non-African and let alone non-Muslim, then I'm pushing it, fam.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? you're getting that pressure.
Yeah.
So I don't know, tell me how you feel about the religion part of things.
So I think with the religion part, and I'm speaking from a Christian standpoint, I think with Muslims, it's a little bit stricter. Like a lot of Muslims I've met, they'll tell you, well, the person has to convert first before they can even think about engaging.
Or willing to, yeah.
I think for Christians, I mean, if you're like a super devoted Christian, then I think it'll be a big deal. But otherwise, I feel like I've seen a lot of Christians where the spouses maybe non-denominational, or they're not, you know, practicing anything, and in some cases I've actually seen Christians and Muslims. And for me, where I grew up in Nigeria, there was that we actually had, that was common where you see
Christians and Muslims getting married.
Okay. It was 50-50. You know, I had a few friends back in high school that they're, you know, they grew up in a Christian and a Muslim household, and when they grew up they went to both. And then when they got old enough, their parents would just tell them to choose one, you know.
Isn't that kind of a WizKid story, I think?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't realize that.
Well, Ivan, what's your opinion on it?
On religion?
Well, on the religion, pressure of the religion.
I think
combining that with marrying a non-African.
Yeah, I think it plays a huge part. I can speak from my personal experience, which is it hasn't been a deal breaker to me. Of course, I'm not getting married, but it's like, when I have dated before, religion hasn't.
It's not a deal breaker for you.
For me.
For you.
Okay. But there's been people in my family, not my direct family, but my family that have issues with that religion,
right? Yeah.
Where it's like, what? How can you date like
someone that's not this? Like, you know, you guys are not going to see eye to eye, blah,
know,
blah, blah.
Stuff like that. Yeah. And I have friends who are like, if this person is not my religion, then it's a deal breaker because my religion is the way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of like ignorance there where it's like, okay, let's dissect that. But
well, I wouldn't pass it as ignorance because, you know, it depends to a lot of part of how the person grew up, you know, you know, the family upbringing or family structure they had. And I'm not saying that people who come from really religious families tend to be most religious. It's actually, I think, the opposite usually. A lot of times it's the influence too, when what they grew up and what they see is, or what they were being taught and lectured. If you're always growing up being taught that you should only marry your religion, you've just only thing you've seen, Maybe. You know, you can inherently think that that's only bad. A person is supposed to, if they even want to, you want to be that, you automatically assume that they're supposed to convert to your religion.
Yeah, but that is ignorance in a sense. Just the ignorance has such a connotation with it, but it's, they don't know, you know, any different. Well,
it's not open-minded.
It's not, they don't know any different.
Open-minded, because ignorance... You know, it's again, if that's your religious belief, you know, that you think that a person who you're supposed to marry is supposed to be in your own religion. I don't think that's ignorant. No. You know, is it, a little bit close-minded?
Yeah, and not to, this is not to bash anybody that's thinking like that. I think it's more of closed-mindedness. Because at the end of the day, the world is kind of the world is bigger than that. You know, like the world has people that are not your religion as well.
Exactly.
And I think the first step to getting somebody over is to show how good of a person you are, I think. And I think sometimes people kind of forget that piece of it and focus too much on the religion part of it. So
we have to respect everyone's belief, right? At the end of the day. But, you know, like I mentioned, I just feel like a lot of times, especially in our African societies, it's a huge pressure, a huge deal breaker on a lot of marriages. I've seen, you know, it comes up as a major issue, right? Of what's the person's religion, especially if you're taking it outside. Because, you know, outside of the country, non-African pressure, maybe a little bit, you know, is she different race? Maybe more, but... You know, now when you say all that combined with religion, sheesh. For me, I'm like, okay, now this is
it. And that's if they're
religious. You're pushing the pressure, you know?
To start,
So have you guys ever thought of like a Christian or a Muslim trying to date somebody that's like a traditional African religion?
Like a indigenous religion?
Like, what you would call voodoo.
Do they exist? Do we still practice those things?
Yeah.
No, so you're saying, have we ever seen a relationship where it's like, I'm a spiritual man, like traditional guy, and then the girl would be like a different, like, you know?
The girl would be like a traditional African religion, which is...
It's like two.
Because, for me...
And then, like, I'm Christian or Muslim?
Yeah, like...
Have I ever seen that?
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
Because in Christianity, right, you thought that, oh, yeah, that's just bad. That's the devil. That's this, you know?
Yeah, because that's what we're taught. Yeah.
But, like, that was really the African religion before the missionaries came. So,
there was no, you know, both religions, both are major religions, right? Mm-hmm. They were imported. Mm-hmm. I don't know if imported is a bad word, but more or less,
the
right?
The missionaries brought the religion.
They brought
us,
it. You know, it's via Islam. It could be via trade, and you know, people from Middle East slowly crossing the Sahara and bringing religion, Christianity. You know, is the things fall apart, right? Gives us perfect perspective on
exactly
how religion comes into play and the break from the indigenous beliefs.
That's a different topic. But Jimon Hounsou actually has a documentary on Amazon Prime. I forget the name, but it's pretty much, he talks about like voodoo and the traditional.
Yeah, African, what they call it now, black magic.
Yeah,
black magic. You know, but I mean, and if you think about the, you know, there's certain parallels, and I'm not saying I am one, but I actually watched it and it was an eye opener for me. You know, but there's certain parallels, and it's kind of interesting that we as a people were taught to hate what's ours and what we grew up knowing, and to be like, oh, this thing that was brought to you from somebody else is so much greater. So
you took the words out of my mouth with that one, man. Like there's so many things we need to unlearn about, I feel like, about traditional whether that's medicine,
we had our own beliefs and practices before the religions came. We have to always acknowledge that, and that spreads over to our cultural practices. A lot of times what we see, it's, you know, in our culture, that's deemed as religious. It's not. That's your tradition. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with actually religion.
Yep.
So it's a huge blend. I even say like most, you know, like our African societies and our cultures and our religions, there's a huge, well, not a huge percentage, but I would say there's a considerable amount of percentage that's based on actually those traditional beliefs that has filtered over into the religion or passed over. So, you know, how we practice, let's say, Islam versus someone in the Middle East is different because we have our own credits, a lot of our own cultural things that culture we put into it. And where does that stem from? The beliefs probably you had before the religion came.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a religion topic, but...
Yeah, that's a different topic. Let's not get to... I don't want to think about it. You know, but it's kind of interesting to me.
It's interesting.
It's very
interesting. Food for thought. Food for thought.
Very interesting. Another one is money.
You got to have money, man.
The African man has to have money.
You ever heard the saying, "Na money be fine, Bobo"? You can't come through with a six pack and be broke, and then the guy with the big belly and he got the dollars.
You know, look, the African man who has to have money. That is, you know,
there's so many things wrong with that image.
It's an image, yeah. It's an image.
But what do you think about money? Like, do you think African men face a lot of pressure to be the breadwinner, or is it even self-imposed?
The provider.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it kind of goes back to traditions and how we were always brought up from time, like back in Africa, is the man is the provider and the woman kind of takes care of the household, you know. So traditionally, that's kind of how it's always been. So we're still trying to use that same tradition today when it's like, well, a lot has changed in the world. There's been a lot of evolution. I mean, women have really come up. They've shown they're equal and in some cases better than men. So I think it really shouldn't be about, you know, who's the breadwinner. It's if you should kind of look at it more of a from a power couple standpoint, where both of you guys are both contributing to a big pot for this family that you're building together. So regardless of who's the breadwinner, I think you guys are both going to win. But I think just based on tradition, for the most part, the guys want to be the, you know, you feel you have that pressure. Like, oh, I need to make money to be able to take care of my family.
So do you think that's self-imposed or do you think it's just
passed on?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I'll say a little bit of both. I think the society kind of expects it from you. So you expect it from yourself as well.
Yep.
So for me, like I always kind of saw it as regardless of what my wife does, I should be able to take care of my wife and my family. And but now if she's making a lot more money than me, then that's a plus. Nice. But I think from my standpoint, I should be able to handle my business as a man. And that's kind of, so in that sense, that will be self-imposed, which is not necessarily like a bad thing. It's just like, you know, you want to make sure.
I don't think it's a bad thing. I agree with you know, what you said is, you know, as a man or whatever, you know, I don't want to be also all alpha and stuff, but I should provide. I want to you know, take care of my wife and my family. And it has nothing to do with what they can do, get their own bread or do have their 100%. Own careers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Power to you, we'll support you, whatever. But I just feel like as a man, it's my responsibility and, you know, as to be a provider as well. And it does, provider though, doesn't just mean financially.
And yeah, you know, that's
so
a good
that's
point.
A lot of the stigma that we have as African men is when we say we're the provider, I'm the man of the house.
Yeah.
It's strictly on a financial basis.
Exactly.
On providing money, you know, being paying for everything.
Because now once your spouse is making more than you, what are you bringing to the table?
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's why I was saying there's so many things
only
wrong
DSTV
with that.
DSTV remotes.
That's why I was saying there's so many things wrong with that image. It's because we're taught that, like, the money is the end all be all, right? So it's like, if I'm bringing the money in, then I'm going to tell you what to do. You know, you don't
exactly.
talk back to me.
So yeah, you become a slave to me.
Say,
yeah,
you know, where's my food? There's all this stuff. Yeah. You start, you know.
There's so many negative things that come with that image, right? While if you take that away from the man, right?
Mm.
It's like, what are you providing now? It's like, are you being, you know, your spouse's best friend? Are you helping raise the children? Are you, you know what I'm saying?
There's more to it.
There's a lot more to it.
And I think nowadays people are starting to realize that too. It's like to see that it's not just about money anymore. It's about you guys actually building a family together. So you got to figure out, okay, what all needs to be done around the house? What and who's taking what? You know, you guys are splitting the responsibility. That's not like just you coming home and, you know, you getting waited on all the time, you know, Because sometimes you can be like, oh, you know what? Oh, she's with the baby. Now you got to do the dishes. You know, you got to cook the food, you know.
Right.
And you take turns and kind of ease the burden off of somebody else. Like, you guys are together as a team for a reason, right?
So exactly.
Teamwork.
Teamwork. You keep, you know, keep the load lighter versus just trying to put it all on one person.
Yeah.
I remember my one of my aunties was telling me a story about, you know, a couple, and you know, the woman's working, I guess the guy lost his job or whatever, and he was just chilling home for like a year, you know, and the wife would go to work, come back, there's like dirty dishes, and then
he didn't do anything.
Yeah, he's not doing nothing. He still expects her to cook when she can come back.
Of like, course, so
what's
he does.
Good? Where's my food? You know.
Yeah.
You see?
But the mentality was, well, I paid bride price, so you know, now you gotta take care of me, you know.
You know, it's frustrating when I hear those things, because I really think that this should just be evaporated from the stigma of African men, or our practice of thinking, you're not marrying a wife then.
You're looking for a maid. Just get your maid.
And it's like, why can't you do it by yourself? Yeah. And, you know, who are you? So anyway, I hope that stigma I feel like we should be providers, but not just on a... thinking that we just provide, as in we pay for everything, but we don't, you know, we don't fulfill our duties in other sectors and other departments.
Yeah. I think the provider piece just, it shows your ambition, you know, because it's like, if you're able to, you know, take care of your own, and genuinely do so, not just throw a couple dollars here, a couple dollars there, and then you go and you have your side cheek, like I'm talking about, like if you're genuinely like able to provide, it shows like ambition, and that's a great trait to have.
I like to see that, you know. Yeah. So tell me, please keep advocating.
Write
the African Dad Survival Guide.
hey, I gotta throw my disclaimer out real quick. I'm not a marriage counselor. I'm just saying stuff from my experience. So
Of course.
Just because I said it don't mean, you know, that's what's going to work for, you know, I think everybody's got to figure out what works for them. Every relationship is different.
They should know that. So, they should know that. Of course.
Disclaimer out there before they come sue the Jola.
What if they're asking you, Temi, for a rate, for counseling rate?
Yeah.
You know?
You know what? We can talk about that offline. Yeah. we collect Bitcoins. Take different kind of crypto.
All right. How about prior to you getting married, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did you, one, shout out to JoJo. Two, was your wife what you imagined a wife would be like, or what did you think your wife would be like?
So yeah, shout out to JoJo, by the way. Mm-hmm. So JoJo and I met in school. So I was in community college at the time, Highline Community College. Go T-Birds. So we met in school. This was back in 2006. And so the first thing is we were friends first. Like, we were, you know, homies, and we were pretty much best friends. We did everything together. You know, I took her out to dates. You know, I told her about my dates and stuff like that. So we kind of got to a point where we were comfortable with each other first, and kind of understood each other and developed that trust before we actually started dating.
Okay.
So once we started dating, I mean, I think we dated for about 4 years or so before we got married.
Okay.
But we've already kind of understood each other and, you know, developed that trust. I think the biggest thing for me is trust. And she trusts me, and I trust her that, you know what, whatever the situation she might be in, I know she's not going to do anything to intentionally hurt me, and I would not do the same to her as well. Mm-hmm. So, like going in before that, I really didn't know what a wife should be or whatever, but I mean, she's a great cook anyway. So between the two of us, you know, she was always going to be the one cooking, because she's just a really great cook.
Mm-hmm.
I try to cook every now and then, but like my food
Temi
is nowhere.
Still got a six pack.
Don't worry.
Yeah, I still got a six pack. So the interesting thing though is, and that's part of marriage, is evolution, right? Because you guys get married and your partner evolves. So the wife evolves, the husband evolves. So I think the important thing is that you evolve together, because if not, that's what kind of drives a wedge between couples. because for example, when we started dating, JoJo wasn't vegan. But she made a decision to want to go vegan, and you know, she told me about it, and it's something that, you know, I respect. And she still cooks, and she, I mean, she cooks vegan food.
Did you go vegan?
No, I didn't go vegan. I'm not part-time? Vegan. But I'm part-time vegan. Part-time, yeah, part-time I always tell everybody I'm part-time vegan because I still eat. I eat the vegan food she cooks. Yeah. And she throws it down. You're actually not going to know. Like, I've had my family come over. She made like a goosey and a foriro and jollof rice and stuff like that. That you're not going to know. And that's what I was saying was like the African palate is actually very vegan friendly. We just don't know it. We're just used to it always having meat, you know, so.
Yeah. Always meat, especially you Nigerian guys.
Yeah.
always like meat.
I mean, man, I have to eat all the meat. I've gone to meat. Sofa every day. Yeah. I provided for this house. Where's my meat? You know.
Like I said, thank you for sharing that because, you know, I take that as a, you know, same thing like a lesson to learn. As you have to be, you know, you can't be too rigid. And for example, you know, a lot of African guys will be like, what do you mean vegan? I'm only going to eat my meat and drink my rice. You know, but one is not only...
And drink Heineken.
Huh?
And drink Heineken.
You know? Heineken and Hennessy. Yeah.
So, you know. But anyway, that's all I was just saying is, you know, look at that.
Yeah.
You know, that's something I'll take as a lesson, you know.
No doubt.
So in marriage, be prepared to evolve with your spouse. I think that's the biggest thing.
That's a really good lesson.
There will be things that used to happen before you guys got married that would change. And I think you just got to evolve together. So
keep going each other.
That's
a bar, bro.
Yes, sir. Free game.
Free game. Now we got to get into some myths that we got to bust. We got to play Myths Busters.
Is that
the unpopular stereotypes?
Oh my God, that's gonna be they're gonna have to tune in for that one on
part two.
Jeez, so
watch out for part two.
You know, Tammy just put us on free game, but part two we gotta dissect.
Mythbusters. We're gonna be Mythbusters. Stereotypes of African men.
Yeah,
jeez, save us,
men, all of them.
I bet.